On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
Back in 1962, the United States started a great experiment called the Peace Corps, the brainchild of President John F. Kennedy. A lot of us have heard of the Peace Corps. A few of us might even have met people who volunteered in the Peace Corps, but most of us don't really know very much about the organization or how things actually work within the Peace Corps. Are they given assignments? Do they have to come up with assignments or jobs? How exactly does it work? Here to talk to us about the Peace Corps, but also more specifically to talk about what it was like to be in the Peace Corps in Thailand toward the end of the Vietnam War, when the United States had a military presence in Thailand as well, is Jim Jopie, who is the author of War of Hearts and Minds, an American memoir. It's from iUniverse. Jim, thanks so much for joining us on the Bookshelf.
Well, thank you.
Let's give them a little bit of background of how you came to be in the Peace Corps.
I applied to be a conscientious objector, but at that time, the just war objection is not appropriate. According to the draft boards, you have to be a conscientious objector due to a pacifist religion, which I was brought up Lutheran, so I didn't have that. So that being the case, I was not draft deferrable. Peace Corps, however, had a policy of accepting individuals regardless of their draft status. So I could join the Peace Corps, and some volunteers who did this were drafted out of the Peace Corps, but I was not. So that was a determination my draft board made not to draft me out of the Peace Corps.
Now, see, that's the first thing that surprised me about your book. I was under the impression that if you joined the Peace Corps, sort of was seen as alternate service, and therefore, so that was the first surprise that I found in your book. The second surprise was I was kind of under the impression that I will admit that this is just from laziness on my part that I never did any research particularly on the Peace Corps, even though I had a friend who was in the Peace Corps and served in the Dominican Republic and was actually killed in a riot down there. When you join the Peace Corps, they say, okay, we're going to send you to this country. Here's your village. Here's your packet of stuff. We're going to send you and learn the language, and you're going to do a very specific job, and it's going to take X number of months, and then we have another job for you. Because I guess if I was running the Peace Corps, I suppose that's the way I thought I would do it. But that's not the way that the Peace Corps was run, or at least not in 1972-73.
I've done research on the Peace Corps, aside from my own experience, and I thought that too. But apparently, community development volunteers all over the world were sent out, most of them without jobs. And that's still true today because I've talked to recent volunteers. In Thailand, the community development volunteers make their own jobs. Some of them don't ever really have a job.
That was extraordinary to me. Now, it is a job. You do get paid something for being in the Peace Corps, right?
Yeah, you get paid quite well, actually.
Okay. Let's see if I remember right from the book. You'd gone to Cornell for a year, taken some time off, studied agricultural engineering, and then gone back to Cornell. Had you already finished by the time that you joined the Peace Corps? I was thinking that you had.
Yeah, I did.
So you were technically an engineer when you joined the Peace Corps. Again, if I was running the Peace Corps and I said, oh, here's a guy who's an engineer, I'm going to send him to do engineering stuff, and here's where we need such a thing done. But were you specifically interested in Thailand, or is that just where there was an opening for a need for someone with your training?
That was the next opening. I didn't specify any country. So that was the next opening, was in civil engineering program in Thailand. And again, I've learned this more recently. The Peace Corps director in Washington was Blatchford, and he had a skills program. He was trying to bring in people that had specific skills, but he was putting them into this community development format, where generalist format. So it was kind of a mismatch for probably many people. In other words, they didn't know how to use a civil engineer.
Right, right.
And there was no funded projects for them to work on, you know.
Now, that's an interesting part of it, too. For example, when you were in Thailand, tell us, how did the money come from the U.S. government, or did it come from private sources, or a little combination of both? This is what also gets interesting about your involvement in the Peace Corps, and what people tended to think of the Peace Corps as being a cover job for working for the CIA, which not true at all.
It was interesting to me, and I tried to figure out over time where the money was coming from and who I was working for, because the Thais thought I was working for the Americans, and the Americans' Peace Corps wanted me to be immersed in Thailand working directly for the Thais. So the money, supposedly, for my program was supposed to come from the Thai Community Development Department. That was the line. But it was impossible to get money from that source because it took 2 years for money to come through once it was approved for a project, so it was impossible to use any money from the Community Development Department for a project that you might have designed. And that it was as if the Peace Corps themselves didn't even know that administratively. There was a lot of lack of communication.
Yeah, that's a pretty significant misunderstanding on the Peace Corps' part, that it would take 2 years to get a project from conception to funded. The Peace Corps, you didn't sign up for a 3-year stint or anything originally. This is not the Army, so you went in for what, kind of an annual contract or?
No, it was 2 years. It was two
okay,
years.
So 2 years. But so conceivably, you got in country and said, hey, I could work on this. I think I'll come up with all the specs for this project. And you would submit it. And by the time your term was finished, if they accepted it and funded it, they'd just be coming up with the acceptance and the funding.
Well, it was worse than that because, as I learned, you would submit your design, stay on a stack in the office. It would not even go into the funding routine. So basically, it was busy work. And the other problem for me was in the next province over, they had plenty of money for projects. And that, I learned, was the CIA province. There was some. So I think their projects may have been funded by USAID, which was sort of a cover for the CIA. So the CIA was indirectly involved.
There were people that, even at the time, thought that Peace Corps was just a cover itself, just like Air America and USAID. It was not conceived to be that. You guys had rules and regulations about that too, right?
Yeah, and I'll tell you what, for many, many years, I was in denial that there could ever have possibly been any CIA involvement in the Peace Corps, but now I think there probably, you know, there was some overlap, and there was a lot of denial about a lot of things that were going on in a wartime environment.
Right. Well, and in Thailand, here you are. The United States has a military presence in the country. You're trying to do something completely unrelated to military goals, and that is to help these rural communities, and in particular, one of the projects that you worked on, there were several of these, weren't there, that you worked on, that had to do with irrigation and with water reclamation and so forth, because these little villages were farming rice in pretty much the same way they had done for centuries, I guess.
Yeah, and, you know, people think there's a lot of water there, which there is, but actually it all comes, during the rainy season.
Right.
So they actually have a period of time, which can be as long as 8 months, when there's no precipitation. So we were trying to hold back water for that period of time so they could fish or whatever.
And
we weren't trying to do anything gigantic. We were just trying to basically build fish ponds. You know.
Well, and of course they needed fish ponds. They needed the protein.
Correct.
Still, you probably didn't have in your mind when you first left the United States to go to Thailand, didn't think, well, I'm looking forward to go over and building fish ponds.
Correct.
What's the hierarchy? Once you're in a foreign nation and you're working for the Peace Corps, do you report to a director of Peace Corps for a region, or is there a national director for that country, or how does that work?
Well, you know, I should say this has changed from when I was in to recently, because the community, there are still today Community Development Department volunteers in Thailand, and today they fill out work reports that go directly to Peace Corps, I think every 3 months. So they're accountable to Peace Corps. But when I was in the Peace Corps, Peace Corps wanted us to be accountable to the Thai government. So I wrote work reports that went to the Thai government, and the Peace Corps never had any record of what I was doing at all.
Wow.
And that was a problem because the Thai government officials at that time wanted us to fill out reports that said that we were working when we didn't have a job, and then they would pay us per diem money to do that. So there was a moral conflict every month that I had to do that. It's like being paid a bonus for, you know, for lying, basically.
Yeah. Well, now, of course, not everybody who joined the Peace Corps was trying to not be in military service. There were people who joined the Peace Corps for strictly humanitarian reasons, and there were also people who joined the Peace Corps because they wanted to make a difference in a foreign country or were particularly concerned about the level of poverty in a particular country. So you have lots of reasons that people got involved in Peace Corps. How many people would you say were probably in the program about the time you were in the early 70s?
How many volunteers were there?
Yeah. I mean, do you have any idea of, like, worldwide, how many people were involved?
I think it was a low ebb in the Nixon era, so it was about 7,000 worldwide.
Wow, but still, 7,000 people, that's an impressive core of of volunteers. How much bigger is it now, say?
I don't think it's much over 10,000. It might be 10,000.
Just in case people are interested in finding out more about the Peace Corps, are they still looking for people? Obviously, engineers and people like that are going to be awfully handy. Can they use people who don't have that much technical training, or is it they really pretty much need people to go into villages and do the kind of work that you guys were doing?
I can only speak for Thailand, but it might be true worldwide. But in Thailand, what the people, what the country, the government, I'm talking about the people, because you didn't work for the local villagers, you worked for the government of Thailand.
Right.
But what the government of Thailand wanted was English teachers. And so, and the English teachers, I mean, it's an excellent situation to learn how to become an English teacher. And then a TEFL, teaching English as a foreign language volunteer. And you can use that as a career in America or anything. I'm sure they need that all over the world.
Well, I realize we're getting a little away from your story, but I feel like people, one of the things that drew me to your book originally was how very little I knew about the Peace Corps other than it was this wonderful ideal started in the early 60s and that Sergeant Shriver was the first director. But honestly, I'm embarrassed to admit this, but I didn't really know much more about the Peace Corps than that tiny kernel of its beginnings.
Yeah, I would like to say that I didn't write what I consider to be a book about the Peace Corps. It was more about the Vietnam War.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
The setting is your involvement in the Peace Corps during a particular time, but it's also about you can't take things completely out of context, and the context that you're in is major. The fact that you're in Southeast Asia, which was a war zone and from much of the 1960s and in the 1970s up until 75. So that's a critical part of the story and how that affected the work that you were doing in Peace Corps and what it was like for you guys as individuals being Peace Corps volunteers. That's what the book is about. So we don't want to give people the wrong impression that War of Hearts and Minds by Jim Jopy is... from iUniverse is not a history of the Peace Corps, but the Peace Corps is the setting for this nonfiction account, for this true account of what happened to Jim and other volunteers who were in Thailand when it was a war zone.
In fact, I would like to say this because I when you go to Thailand, of course, there's different books in the English language bookshelves, and I read a book called The Ideal Man, published last year, which gives information about the origins of the Vietnam War, which is better than anything I've ever seen. And this is coming out so many, many years later. You know, it's about a man named Jim Thompson, who was the OSS, which was a predecessor of the CIA, and then became a businessman in Thailand. Anyway, I consider my book to be sort of in that. I'm obviously no Jim Thompson, but I'm writing about the same types of things.
Well, and as a matter of fact, one of the things that makes Jim's story particularly interesting is that you wrote this. You have been writing for some time, and you submitted a screenplay or information that you wanted to turn into a screenplay, which you were told was not going to be usable. Blah blah blah. Thanks so much for submitting it. Here it is back. We didn't even bother to read it. And then out comes this movie, Volunteers, which seems to have some similarity to the situations, although they take it in a different direction than you did. And that seems, I can understand that would be particularly bothersome that all of a sudden out of the blue, here's a movie about Peace Corps volunteers in a war zone. Maybe it's your story and they just took it different directions for dramatic license, or maybe they just got the idea from you and then invented their own stuff.
Well, I've recently had a discussion on this about this on the there's a Peace Corps online website. There's a Peace Corps writers. There's another website, Peace Corps writers website, because a lot of Peace Corps volunteers write. And I got some feedback about this particular issue from other people on that website, and it's just interesting. You know, no one believes that this happened except for me. That's because for them to believe that this happened, they would have to believe that there was at that time some interconnection, some communication between the Peace Corps and the CIA. And if that's true, then you know, and the whole Peace Corps idea is it could be thrown out of any country or all countries if that is ever proven. So I'm writing about something that couldn't happen. My whole story is about something that couldn't possibly have happened. That's within a Peace Corps framework. That's how a Peace Corps volunteers would look at it. So I don't really get any dialogue other than that from Peace Corps people. So
you've had now. Do we want to talk about one of the most wrenching emotional parts of your story, and that is your personal relationship with a Thai woman named Noi? Do you want to talk about that a little bit, or am I getting in kind of private territory there?
No, I don't have any problem with that. I wish it was personal, but at this point it's not personal because she has for all of these years decided that I'm basically not part of her life, so it cannot be personal.
Oh, okay. Well, and to me, the saddest part of this situation with Noi was how it affected your relationship with a guy that you trusted and with whom you had worked as a Peace Corps volunteer. And it seems like Winston just kind of, this showed his true colors, and it's not always a pretty sight to find out that somebody that you liked and trusted can be so duplicitous.
Well, I'm surprised that you say that because, and this is what the people on the Peace Corps writers website that my reviewer on, she said that it was like a buddy who had betrayed me, but it wasn't so much that as someone who there's only two of us there, so we knew each other quite well, but we were not really friends.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I just was projecting something there. I guess I figured
other people have done that, and I'm surprised because I thought I made pains to put a distinction between that. From the very beginning, we had a different point of view of how things of our roles, and that was.
I suppose to a certain extent that I made the same mistake that other people have done because we thought, well, if I was in a foreign country and the only person I knew that spoke English as their first language was this other guy, then I suppose we'd be buddies on some level because we had that in common. But yeah, you're right. I mean, obviously, in your book, you don't say, yeah, we were best of friends and he was a Judas for doing this to me. But I think it was still pretty disappointing for you to have this happen, obviously.
Yeah. It was. Because it was over this woman Noi, but he already had a woman that he'd invested in, named Sinuan, and she was devastated by the turn of events as well. You don't have to say, I'll say it. There was a child involved, and the town thought the child was mine, but it was actually the daughter of the chief communist suppression officer of that province. There was a lot of things going on that I don't even know, but I don't think he knew that he was the father ever.
Now, as it turned out, you did marry a Thai woman, Farita?
Yeah, Farita, that's right.
Yeah, Farita. When did you meet her?
She was a pen pal relationship many, many years later. I met her actually in Hong Kong. I went to visit her. She was a domestic worker in Hong Kong when I was corresponding with her, but she is from Thailand. She's in Thailand right at this moment. She's visiting her. I just came back, and she's going to be there two more weeks, so with her family.
Once you came back to the United States, you had been raised in a Lutheran family, but your relationship with God certainly grew more distinct and more emotional, and not just because I grew up a Lutheran too.
Well, you did.
There's a lot of head knowledge when you grow up as a Lutheran, which I, as a Methodist now, I'm very grateful because we learned a lot of reasons to believe in the Bible, but there's not very much of an emotional element, and sometimes it's easy to allow ourselves to wander off from God when we don't feel that emotional attachment as well. And I got the feeling that after you got back that your faith deepened and was richer. In fact, for a while, you lived at Covenant House and then worked for Covenant House. Am I reading that right?
Yeah, that was many years later. I was at Covenant House here in Grand Rapids, Michigan. But I knew I was a Christian after that. Before that, I was one of these people that respected all world religions as if they had the same God. We were all going for the same God. And I don't believe that anymore, even though that would certainly seem to be a very nice way to believe, but I don't. I'm a Christian.
I don't.
Other world religions are wrong.
Right.
And it's hard for me to believe that because, it doesn't seem fair, you know.
But. Yeah, because you have friends who are not Christians. I'm sure there are members of your wife's family back in Thailand who are not Christian.
Correct.
I have two people who have worked for me. One worked for me for 3 years and has just graduated and gone off to seminary, and his sister, who just started working for me, and they are both Thai, and their mom is American from Missouri, and their dad is a Thai, and when they first saw the book, they said, "Oh, when you finish with the book, we sure want to read it because we want to see if he talks about places that we know." So they're very excited about me passing along my copy of the book when you and I finish talking.
Well, I'm excited that there's actually people that feel that way about my book because it's been hard to find people that have that natural interest in it.
How do people get a copy of the book?
Well, the book is available on the internet at either at Amazon or at iUniverse. But it's quite expensive because it is long. I appreciate that you read all the way through it. It's probably twice as long as it should be for a saleable book. So the paperback is actually $35.95, but the ebook is only $3.95. So,
oh, okay.
So if people have one of those e-readers, they could download it for. In fact, I think somebody downloaded it from Barnes & Noble for $2.
Wow.
I don't know if they have a special price and that's.
Maybe it's with Barnes and Noble's particular type of reader, Kindle or whatever it is. You know,
with the Nook.
Yeah, that's theirs. So that's kind of an enticement for them. They get a special discount, perhaps on downloadables. Well, that's excellent. Can they go to a website to find out more? Do they go to iUniverse.com, or do you have a website they can go to?
I have JimJopie.com. I started a blog mostly about this book. If you Google my name, actually, Jim Jopie, there's about 50 distributors of my book, even though it hasn't sold. They haven't sold it, but they're selling it. So, but iUniverse, or anyone that was, I think they're all the same, actually the same price.
Well,
it's printed on demand. Nobody has any shelves with my book on it.
Right. Yeah, my oldest son is an author, and he's written a couple of fictional books, and that's the way that they are also available from different publishers on demand. And when you're first getting started in the business, if you can't find and these days it's harder and harder, if you can't find an agent who will take your book, believe in the book, and then plug it to the big publishing houses, it's either that or pay for it to get printed at your local printing shop and sell it on the back of your car. So this is a step in the right direction. It's not like a huge amount of money that you have to outlay after you've put a huge amount of your life and your soul into a book. Well, I'm glad that there are lots of places that you can find it, because I think that's a very good thing. The more places there are, the more likely it is that people will see it.
I talked to somebody in Thailand. I may publish it there. And, of course, that's another investment of money, but I think I'll get more readers there, actually.
I would think so.
Yeah. Well, and I'm gonna have to make it shorter so that now they can't sell the ebook because the ebook's already for sale, so I'm going to have to make it a different, shorter book that they'll sell as a hard copy.
Yeah, that's okay. It's easier to edit a book than it is to write the whole thing from scratch.
Oh, yeah, I wanted to include everything I included. I don't know how you felt going through it, if you wanted to. You're sick of it after halfway in, or how that works.
I will say that there were times that I thought, it just breaks my heart that he's going through so much effort to try to get back with Noi, and it just seems like that it's just not going to happen. But maybe it will. Maybe it will. You know, I fought the temptation to go to the end and see how it turned out. But that's the only thing I would say about it. I kept thinking, oh, it's going to happen. And of course, we've blown the surprise now in case anybody wanted to buy the book. Obviously, he married somebody else, so things didn't work out the way he had hoped at the time. But
yeah.
That's part of the journey too, isn't it? The things that we strive for and we hope for.
I look back on things, and there was a Christian Actually, he was the director of an organization called Christian Crafts. At one time, I was trying to market stuff from Thailand. This was after I was already booted out of the country. But he wrote me a letter back. This is probably 40 years ago, and he said that, in his experience, you know, Christians, you try to do something, and you don't ever accomplish what you're trying to do, and you feel so frustrated. But something else can happen that you don't even know about, you know, because of what you're trying to do, and that can be God's will.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And so, you know, I wouldn't even know about it myself. And I can only hope that, you know, in my wake, there's more positive than negative, you know, because there can be negative, too. You know, people are affected by things that you do.
Sure.
Well, especially in a country like, you know, like what was going on at the edge of the Vietnam War. You know, I could have got the Peace Corps kicked out of the country quite easily. And I think that's what people were afraid of, you know, that type of thing. But that didn't happen. So.
And I'm glad of that.
Yeah.
Well, Jim, it's been a fascinating trip going through your book, and I've enjoyed it very much, and I'm really glad we had a chance to talk. And I know that there's a lot of other things that we could talk about. Is there anything in particular that you want to make sure that we mention before we go?
Yeah, if someone is interested in my book or my website, I just started this blog. I wrote on it yesterday, and it's about the book and my recent trip to Thailand, actually.
Okay.
But more than the book, but they would have to know how to spell my last name.
Right.
I'm Jim Jopi, and it's spelled Jouppi, and that's, you know, then they can Google around and see what I've been dealing with. So
excellent, Jim.
I appreciate this opportunity to talk to you too.
Absolutely. Thank you for being willing to share all the good things and the difficult things about. Not only your time in Peace Corps in Thailand, but in your life. And thank you for being open and honest with us, and we appreciate that.
Okay, thanks very much, Doc.
Once again, our guest, Jim Jopi, that's Jouppi. His book, War of Hearts and Minds, an American Memoir, and it's about serving in Thailand from 1971 to 1973 as part of the Peace Corps. At the same time, the United States was involved militarily in Thailand as a staging area going into Vietnam. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station on The Bookshelf. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless. On The Bookshelf, copyrighted by Kirby Creative Services, Inc., used by permission of Troy Broadcasting Corporation.